Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, a warning about blue-green algae. We'll learn all about pet allergies and feline obesity. And do therapy dogs like their jobs? From the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, pet allergies. Almost 62% of U.S. households have pets, and more than 161 million of these pets are cats and dogs. Unfortunately, millions of pet owners have an allergy, allergic rhinitis, to their animals. The proteins found in pets' dander, skin flakes, saliva, and urine can cause an allergic reaction or aggravate asthma symptoms in some people. Also, pet hair or fur can collect pollen, mold spores, and other outdoor allergens. An allergen is a normally harmless substance that triggers the immune system to overact in people with allergies. This response can cause allergy symptoms such as sniffling, sneezing, and itchiness, and watery eyes. Contrary to popular opinion, there are no truly hypoallergenic breeds of dogs or cats. Allergic dander in cats and dogs is not affected by length of hair or fur, nor by the amount of shedding. Giving up a pet in order to prevent allergy symptoms isn't always necessary. An allergist or immunologist has specialized training and experience to accurately diagnose your symptoms and develop a treatment plan to help you or your child manage allergy symptoms and potentially keep your furry friends. Pet allergy symptoms and diagnosis. Symptoms. Pet allergy symptoms appear during or shortly after exposure to the animal. These symptoms may linger long after the animal is gone. This is because the dander remains in the air, on furniture, or on your clothing. If you experience the following symptoms after being near a dog or cat, you may have an allergy. The symptoms are sneezing, itchy, watery eyes, runny nose, and congestion. If you are exposed to a pet on a long-term basis, you may have more chronic symptoms such as ongoing nasal congestion and not the sudden symptoms seen with short-term exposure, making it appear as if the pet is not causing your problems. Additionally, contact with a pet may trigger skin allergy symptoms, including itchy skin or raised red patches or hives. Pets can also trigger asthma symptoms, causing wheezing, difficulty breathing, or chest tightness. Diagnosis. You or your doctor may suspect you have a pet allergy, but allergy testing performed by an allergist or immunologist is the best method to diagnose exactly what you are allergic to and to develop a personalized plan to manage your symptoms. Pet allergy treatment and management. The most effective way to manage pet and other allergic rhinitis symptoms is to avoid the allergens causing the symptoms. Antihistamines and other over-the-counter allergy medications may help relieve symptoms, but they are not ideal as a long-term treatment. If you have a pet allergy, talk to your allergist or immunologist about the potential for allergy shots or immunotherapy. Allergy shots have a proven track record as an effective form of long-term treatment. Other ways to minimize pet allergy symptoms include: try not to hug and kiss pets if you are allergic to them. Keeping pets out of your bedroom can reduce allergy symptoms since you spend about 8 hours every day in this room. So can keeping your pet off of upholstered furniture. Have someone who doesn't have allergies brush the pet regularly outside, not indoors. Use a double or microfilter bag in the vacuum to reduce the amount of pet allergen present in carpeting that leaks back into the room. Use HEPA air cleaners, which can be a big help in removing unwanted allergenic particles from the air. And remove carpeting and rugs, which can trap pet dander and other allergens. Keeping animals outside is only a temporary solution, since pet dander will eventually make its way indoors as it is carried on clothing. When all else fails, it may be necessary to find a new home for the pet. Then that may take 6 months or more after the pet is gone to completely get rid of the dander. Also suggested is if you have a pet allergy and you visit someone who has a cat at their house, take a shower and wash your hair and clothes as soon as you get home. You can find the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology on their website at aaai.org. And now that we've learned about pet allergies and how to manage them, let's have some fun and take the quiz that's on the AAAI's website. More than half of U.S. households include a member of the dog or cat family. Yet, millions of people suffer from pet allergies. Let's take this quiz to test our knowledge about popular myths as well as coping strategies related to pet allergies. There are 7 questions. Question 1. Which of the following breeds is considered a hypoallergenic dog? Poodle, beagle, terrier, all of the above, or none of the above? I'll give you the answer right now, and you can see if you were right. The answer for question 1 is none of the above. While some breeds are labeled hypoallergenic, no dog is 100% free from the allergens that can cause pet allergy. However, some people with pet allergy do better with a dog that has short hair or sheds less. Question 2. Pet allergies are triggered by the hair on a pet. True or false? The answer is false. Pet allergies are caused by an allergen found on the pet's skin or dander, saliva or urine. Question 3. Symptoms of pet allergy are similar to hay fever symptoms. True or false? The answer is true. Pet allergy symptoms can include sneezing, coughing, runny nose, scratchy throat or mouth, itchy, red, or watery eyes. For some people with allergic asthma, being around a pet can trigger wheezing or difficulty breathing. How are you doing so far? Here's question 4. Reptiles are a common cause of pet allergy. True or false? Ha, okay, that was a trick question. We didn't cover reptiles. The answer is false. That is rare. Pet allergies are most common among dogs, cats, rodents, and other animals with fur, not so much among reptiles. Question 5, if you are allergic to pets, you can have symptoms even when the pet is not in the room. True or false? True. Pet allergens can collect on upholstered furniture, carpet, linens, and clothing. For those with mild pet allergy, regular cleaning can help reduce symptoms. Other tips include replacing carpeting with hardwood floors, keeping pets out of bedrooms, and use of HEPA air purifiers and filtering products. Question 6. Pet allergy is a form of allergic rhinitis. True or false? True. Allergic rhinitis is the medical term for a group of allergies that typically cause symptoms in the nose, throat, eyes, ears, skin, and roof of the mouth. There are 2 types of allergic rhinitis. Seasonal allergic rhinitis, often referred to as hay fever, is typically caused by outdoor allergens, such as pollen from trees, grasses, and weeds. Perennial allergic rhinitis occurs year-round. It is usually triggered by allergens such as pet dander or dust mites. And question 7, which of these will not necessarily help minimize symptoms if you are allergic to pets? Try not to hug or kiss pets. Keep your pets out of bedrooms. Use a double or microfilter bag in your vacuum cleaner. Or keep your pets outdoors. And the answer is, keeping your pets outdoors will not necessarily help minimize symptoms if you are allergic to pets. While keeping animals outside may make a slight improvement, pet dander will eventually find its way indoors on clothing or shoes. And who wants to keep their pets outdoors all the time anyway? How'd you do on the quiz? If you want to take it again, you can visit the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology's website at aaai.org. You could also find information on studies on whether exposure to cats and dogs might reduce the risk of certain allergic conditions in children, as well as other helpful allergy-related information. And now, for the portion of the program I like to call, Don't Drink That. Don't drink the water. Blue-green algae can be deadly for dogs and other animals. By Dr. Mary Fuller, DVM, at Vet Street. It should be the epitome of pure joy, a dog leaping off the dock and splashing into a lake on a sweltering summer day. But for some dog owners, the scene can quickly turn into tragedy. The culprit, toxic blue-green algae. Blue-green algae can cause signs of poisoning in as little as an hour, according to Justine Lee, DVM, a board-certified criticalist and toxicologist at the Animal Emergency and Referral Center of Minnesota. Death has been reported within just a few hours. Signs of vomiting, collapse, seizures, and coma can be almost immediate, and often it's too late to treat by the time the pet gets to a veterinary clinic. Although dogs are most commonly affected, blue-green algae can be toxic and even fatal to cats, horses, livestock, birds, and other wildlife that drink from contaminated ponds or groom themselves after being in the water. For people who water ski or swim in water containing toxic blue-green algae or who inadvertently swallow the organisms, exposure can also lead to illness and death. Toxic when the conditions are right. Despite their name, blue-green algae aren't really plants. Although they live in the water and make their own food through photosynthesis, they're actually microscopic organisms called cyanobacteria that can be found in freshwater lakes and streams, brackish water, a combination of fresh and salt water, marine water, and even backyard ponds. But not all blue-green algae are toxic. The conditions have to be right. This usually occurs in hot weather from mid-summer to fall when the water temperatures are at their warmest. The combination of sunlight as well as nutrient-rich phosphorus and nitrogen from fertilizer runoff and decaying fish and plants encourage the organisms to grow into toxic colonies or blooms. That's when clear water can be transformed into a witch's brew that resembles pea soup or green paint. The algae may float underneath the water, collect on the surface in an oily film, or form a thick scum that can hinder swimmers and boats. As the algae die, they can emit a stench like rotting plants. Toxins are typically swallowed. Because dogs tend to love all things putrid and stinky, they're more likely than people to dive into the turbid waters. They can inadvertently swallow blue-green algae, especially when fetching balls, decoys, and in the case of hunting dogs, wild game. And it doesn't take much to cause a problem. Just a few mouthfuls can be harmful. Signs can begin soon after exposure. Blue-green algae can produce a number of different toxins, including microcystins and anatoxins. The signs in a dog can vary depending on the type and amount of toxin ingested. Microcystins can cause liver damage, which can lead to weakness, vomiting, diarrhea, a yellowish tint to the skin, bloody or black stools, pale or yellow gums, seizures, and coma. Anatoxins, on the other hand, tend to affect the central nervous system. Signs may include excessive drooling or tearing, muscle tremors, paralysis and difficulty breathing, resulting in a bluish tone to the skin and gums. According to the CDC, humans can be exposed to cyanobacteria toxins by skin contact, ingestion, or inhaling droplets containing the cyanobacteria that have been dispersed into the air. Skin contact with the toxin may result in rashes and inflammation. Inhalation can cause difficulty breathing. Ingestion can lead to cramps, vomiting, diarrhea, and neurological signs such as tingling and numbness, as well as death. And there is no antidote. Unfortunately, diagnostic tests for blue-green algae aren't widely available in veterinary medicine. And there's no medication that can reverse the toxin once the dog begins to show signs. Because toxic effects can happen quickly. If you suspect your dog has been exposed to blue-green algae, It's important to seek veterinary help immediately. When in doubt, contact your veterinarian, an emergency veterinarian, or the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center at 888-426-4435 for life-saving advice. If the dog isn't showing signs yet, the veterinarian may induce vomiting. Otherwise, the dog may require hospitalization, and treatment can include intravenous fluids, medications to help control seizures, anti-vomiting medications, plasma transfusions, oxygen therapy, or even mechanical ventilation to help him breathe. When in doubt, stay out. Before you take your dog to any body of water, check the local and state swimming advisories to see if there are any blue-green algae warnings. And if the water looks suspicious, it's better for your dog and your family to stay out. After all, it's not easy to determine if algae are poisonous by their visible appearance. Not even a trained veterinary toxicologist or expert can tell if algae are poisonous. By just looking at them, special tests and microscopic evaluation have to be done, according to Dr. Lee. As a result, the safest thing to do is to keep your dog away from any pond with algae on the surface. That advice goes for you, too. If you notice algae after you or your dog has been in the water, rinse off immediately. Blue-green algae are one of the few poisons that can kill a dog acutely, Dr. Lee warns. If you ever see algae on a pond or lake, make sure to keep your dog and yourself away to be safe. Here, again, is the number for the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center. It is 888-426-4435. From Cornell Feline Health Center, Dr. Bruce Kornreich, Associate Director, tells us about feline obesity. Feline obesity, generally viewed as body weight that is 20% or more above normal weight, is the most frequently observed nutritional disorder among domestic cats. Its clinical signs are clearly apparent and, when observed, should be taken seriously and addressed without delay. In itself, obesity will certainly inhibit a cat's normal penchant for physical activity and surely compromise its quality of life. Significant overweight can also exacerbate several serious disorders. Among the conditions potentially aggravated by overweight are osteoarthritis, which is characterized by the erosion of cartilage, the smooth tissue in joints that protects the ends of bones from painfully rubbing directly against one another, hip dysplasia, a genetically inherited and incurable malformation in which the femoral head of a cat's thigh bone does not fit properly into a socket at the lower end of the animal's hip bone, and diabetes mellitus, a disease caused by insufficient production of or response to the hormone insulin, which is essential to the regulation of blood sugar. Cardiovascular health can also be impaired by obesity, since excessive weight places an extra burden on a cat's heart and vascular system. Obesity in cats is definitely a growing problem, says Carolyn McDaniel, VMD, a lecturer in clinical sciences at Cornell University's College of Veterinary Medicine. Probably 50% of cats seen at veterinary clinics these days are overweight, if not obese. Dr. McDaniel's view is consistent with various studies, finding that an estimated 5 to 10% of cats today can be considered overweight, and that 40% fall into the obese category. To assess the weight status of a cat, some veterinarians may use a 9-point scoring system with a score of 4.5 to 5 points indicating that an animal is at its ideal weight. A score of 9 would mean that a cat is grossly obese, while an emaciated, severely underweight cat would have a score of 1. Any cat that has a score above 6.5 or 7 would be classified as overweight, and a score of 8 or above would mean that the animal is severely overweight or obese. An owner can also assess a cat's physique by using a body condition score chart. available from pet food manufacturers such as Purina and Hill's. This assessment involves 1, a rib check, in which the owner runs both hands palm face down across the animal's rib cage on either side. 2, a profile check in which the animal is viewed from the side. And 3, an overhead check in which the owner looks down on the cat from above. In a severely obese cat, the ribs would not be palpable under a heavy layer of fat. There will be heavy fat deposits over the lumbar area, face, and limbs. The abdomen will be distended and the waistline will not be visible. According to Dr. McDaniel, a major factor responsible for feline obesity is the practice of free feeding, in which a bowl of dry food is available for consumption by a cat throughout the day. Accordingly, she says, used canned food, which typically has a higher protein and lower carbohydrate content than kibbles. Since canned food is 90% water, this will also increase the cat's fluid intake. In addition, she points out, the use of canned food encourages feeding meals rather than allowing the animal to consume the excessive amounts of dry food that is made constantly available. We should be feeding meals to our cats, not allowing them to eat whenever they want to, she advises. There should be a distinct meal time, and the owner should be in control of that. Any feline weight reduction program should be carried out under the direction of a veterinarian, Dr. McDaniel advises. A cat that is put on a sudden starvation diet, she warns, is at risk of developing a serious health problem, such as hepatic lipidosis. What you want to aim for is a gradual weight loss, perhaps 1 or 2% loss of body weight per week. I always recommend that an owner of a chubby cat purchase a baby scale in order to monitor a cat's weight at home. Gradual is the way to go. Okay, so here's something I've wondered about. Therapy dogs work miracles, but do they like their jobs? Published in National Geographic, May of 2018, Linda Lombardi reports that a new study examining the stress levels of working canines provides some reassuring results. If you are a dog lover, just being with your pet feels good. So it's no surprise that therapy dogs are healing companions for people with health conditions, such as cancer, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and dementia. There are over 50,000 therapy dogs in the United States, and they're becoming more popular in countries from Norway to Brazil. Trained and certified by a variety of organizations, these dogs and their handlers go into hospitals and other facilities and interact with patients. Research confirms that the benefits of pet therapy are real. But what do dogs think about helping humans? Science has considered this question too, and the results are reassuring. A recent study in Applied Animal Behavior Science reports that therapy dogs in pediatric cancer wards are not stressed by their work, and in fact seem to enjoy it in most cases. What made this study unique was that it was a multi-site study. It took place in 5 different hospitals across the country, and the fact that we visited over 100 patients and 26 dogs participated, making it the largest of its kind in the field, says study leader Amy McCullough, National Director of Research and Therapy at American Humane, a Washington, D.C.-based animal welfare organization. The researchers measured levels of cortisol, a hormone elevated in response to stress, in the canine's saliva. The swabs were taken both at home and during therapy sessions at the hospital. However, cortisol levels rise with both good and bad stress. Let's say we have a dog that loves to play ball. When the ball comes out and the dog starts chasing the ball, that would elevate the dog's cortisol levels as well, McCullough says. So the team also videotaped and analyzed 26 canine behaviors in 3 categories. Friendly actions such as approaching a person or play bowing, moderate stress indicators such as lip licking and shaking, and high stress behaviors like whimpering. The scientists found no difference between the study dog's cortisol levels at home and at the hospital, even that evidence that the therapy dogs were not particularly stressed. making work fun. The finding is consistent with previous research, according to Lisa Maria Glenk, author of a 2017 review of the literature on therapy dog welfare. The well-designed study is particularly valuable for its level of detail. Previous studies provided only limited or no information on session activities, which makes it hard to identify the practices that raise stress levels in dogs, says Glenk of Vienna's University of Veterinary Medicine. The next question is whether therapy dogs actually enjoy their work, she says, and the new pediatric cancer study provides a few hints. For example, dogs seemed happier during some activities than others. Looking at the results, it's fair to say that some activities are more fun for the dog. McCullough notes, this is good information for handlers. They can lean toward the activities that they think their dog would enjoy. That requires observing therapy dogs closely, even if they can seem inconsistent at times. For instance, a study found that the dogs who showed the most stressed behaviors also showed the most friendly behaviors, suggesting that some canines may just be more obvious about their feelings. Like with any job, it's important to choose the right candidates, McCullough adds. Many people want to share their pets' affection with their local communities, but that doesn't mean their dog is cut out for this kind of work. It needs to be a mutually beneficial interaction, and when they are visiting with the client, so it's important that the dog really loves their job. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.